So, in general, how do we know whether something exists or not? Yeah. So, if the particular object in question is suitable to be realized or known by a valid cognizer, then that object is an existent, right? So in this is how what certifies or determines whether something exists or not. Yeah. So if it can be realized or certified by a valid cognizer, then it is an existent. And according to the first of the four Buddhist tenets, according to the Great Exposition School, an existent are divided into two. Or existent or things, yeah, are divided into two. There are permanent things and impermanent things. So it is only the great proponents of the Great Exposition who assert permanent things. Yeah. The rest of the other proponents of Buddhist tenets do not claim or assert that there are permanent things. So the Great Exposition School's understanding of thing is pretty much similar to the rest of the other Buddhist tenets. Yeah. How do they define the thing? That which is able to perform a function. So in that sense, the definition is the same. But the proponents of the Great Exposition School go one step further in saying that permanent things can perform functions as well.
답배 샤인도라 다 도마치게 나가 가슴 답배 모바일 신시 샤인도라 도마치게 나가 아니 소소 당고 당민 고바습니다 디샤기도 신시라 다 답배 모바일 세
So the illustrations of permanent things according to this school are given in the bottom of page 2, isn't it? So according to the Great Exposition School, illustrations of permanent things are, for example, uncompounded space, then there are analytical cessations and non-analytical cessations, right? So according to the Great Exposition School, uncompounded space is an illustration of permanent thing. Yeah. So uncompounded space is permanent because it doesn't undergo momentary change. So in that sense, uncompounded space is permanent. Uncompounded space, according to this school, is also a thing. And as you know, a thing is that which is able to perform a function. So according to the Great Exposition School, the uncompounded space performs the function of allowing movement to take place. Because there's space, so this uncompounded space allows or performs the function of allowing, you know, things to be moved within. You know? So this is the Great Exposition School's understanding. Yeah. He agrees.
What are you saying? That didn't matter. So, so, Tango said that on the so, so, Tango said it. So, I mean, Casana, Nimbu took it. That Nimbu Tinibus, yes, yes.
So then, what about analytical cessations? What are analytical cessations? Yeah. Analytical cessations are those permanent cessations of afflictions, any kind of affliction, a permanent cessation or an abandonment of any of the afflictions that comes through the force of the correct antidote, which is the wisdom directly perceiving selflessness.
Yeah.
And in this school, analytical cessations are things, yeah. Analytical cessations are things. You must remember the definition of thing, that which is able to perform a function, yeah. So but we are not talking from, you must not think from the previous module's perspective, yeah. According to this school, the Great Exposition School, analytical cessations are permanent things, which means they are things. Yeah, they are able to perform a function. Why? Because analytical cessations perform the function of ceasing or stopping the afflictions. In that, once the afflictions, whatever afflictions in question, are abandoned, they are prevented from occurring again. So that's the function of the analytical cessations. Yeah. Future geshe in the making.
Oh, didn't it? So the dummy go past it, it's a toddy. Color.
So, non-analytical cessations are also cessations, the ceasing or the stopping of something. But this factor of abandonment or factor of cessation does not come about through the force of an antidote, but rather this factor of cessation or the stopping of whatever in question comes about through the temporal absence of the conditions for the production of that particular phenomenon. Are they? Boleh?
Boleh?
Maybe those of you who are Yamandakas will understand this. Anyway, you know, the horns of a goat will not grow on our heads. Yeah. The horns of a goat doesn't grow on our head because of the absence of the causes for its production. Right? The fact that the horns of a goat will not grow on our head is not due to the force of an antidote, ensuring its complete, you know, non-production, you know, whatsoever. But it's just because for now, hopefully, for now, there's the absence of the causes for its production on our heads. So there's this factor of the non-production of the goat's horns on our heads. There's the factor of non-production of a goat's horn on our heads, right? Right? So that is a non-analytical cessation, right? So then there are also, you know, temporary abandonment or cessation of afflictions, you know, due to achieving the concentrations of the form and formless realms, you know, through cultivating and meditation which on aspects of causeness and causeness, by looking at the levels beneath as cause, and by looking at as the next level as refined, more fine. So anyway, there's this meditation. Basically, so when one's mind is at those levels of form and formless realm concentrations, at those respective concentrations, one has a temporary, one has kind of abandoned the afflictions temporarily. So that temporary abandonment of the afflictions is not due to the force of an antidote, but just because of an absence of the conditions for the afflictions to manifest and arise. So, So anyway, my point for explaining this is for you to understand why, according to this Buddhist tenet, and only this Buddhist tenet who asserts that they are permanent things, yeah. As long as you understand why, where they're coming from, I think that's fine, it's enough. Yeah. Okay. According to the proponents of the Great Exposition, all phenomena are substantially established. So, okay, according to the Great Exposition school, all phenomena, basically anything that exists according to them, is necessarily substantially established. So what does it mean? You see, why do they have this worldview? If it exists, it's necessarily substantially established. Because for them, when you look at things, you know, or events or anything that exists, you know, there must be something from the side of the object. There must be a substance there. There's a substance behind every phenomenon. There's something. You know, that's why we talk about substantiality, you know, right? So according to this school, without this substantiality, you know, from the side of the object, you know, then things cannot exist, you know. There must be something there, you know. You follow? So therefore, for them, anything that exists is necessarily substantially established. You understand the word substance in English is not necessarily, you know, referring to, you know, something, you know, but in a substantiality,
real.
So this is the world view of the Great Exposition School. Anything that exists, basically if it exists, is substantially established. But then you have the next tenet, the Sudra School. Then the one above that, the mind-only school, and the one above that, the autonomy in the way school. They do not assert that all phenomena are substantially established. Because for the Sutra school, the mind-only school, and the autonomy in the way school, to be substantially established means, you know, that the phenomenon in question must first be a composed phenomenon, must be an impermanent phenomenon. Yeah. Whereas in the Great Exposition School, everything, yeah, is necessarily substantially established.
Yeah.
You see, you know, the progression of the view. Here in the Great Exposition School, we are talking about the first school only, right? Everything, yeah, in question, whether permanent or impermanent, anyway, for them, all are things. Yeah. Every phenomenon, every single thing is necessarily, substantially established. And you know the meaning of that, right? Substantially established. Then you have the then what about the next school, the Sudra school, then the mind only school, and then the autonomy in the way school. For them, for these three schools, not everything is substantially established. Only impermanent phenomena are substantially established. Only composed phenomena are substantially established. Yeah. So it's a progression, right? But then when you go up to the highest, the ultimate view, the consequence middle way school, for them, it doesn't matter whether it is an impermanent phenomenon or a permanent phenomenon. For them, all phenomena are not substantially established. You see? So, anyway, this should become clearer as we move along. Okay?
What is it?
So objects of knowledge or existence, you know, in this school earlier, we saw how it was divided into permanent and impermanent things. Yeah, another way of dividing objects of knowledge or existence is into conventional truth and ultimate truth. Yeah, this is on page 3 of the root text, isn't it? Right. So the definition of the conventional truth is as what it is given in Vasubandhu's Treasury of Knowledge, Abhidhamma Kosha. Yeah. So there, the definition of the conventional truth is a phenomenon such that an awareness apprehending it is cancelled if it is broken up or mentally separated into its individual parts. So an illustration of the conventional truth according to the Great Exposition School. Here we are talking about the Great Exposition School's understanding of what the conventional truth is, right? An illustration for that is a vase. So a vase is a conventional truth. So many ways to think about it. Now, why is it a conventional truth? As you know, a vase is made up of many parts, many things coming together, you know, factors, you know, many causes, coming conditions coming together to make a vase. So when the conditions come together, causes come together, then you have a vase. A vase is established, isn't it? Right? Isn't it? Right. But if the vase is destroyed, is smashed, you know, is broken, then the valid mind, the valid cognizer, apprehending that vase, ceases to exist, isn't it? So a vase is not an enduring thing. You know, enduring is not, it's not there all the time. You know, it's not, in that sense, therefore, it's not an ultimate. You know, and it's, in that sense, it's not real, the truth. And therefore, it is conventional truth. So therefore, you see, the vase is an imputed existence. Yeah, you know, right? According to this school conventional truths, imputed existence are synonymous, right? So the vase, therefore, is not enduring. Is it because once you smash it, you know, or you break it up, the mind apprehending it ceases to exist. No? So it's not. So therefore, it's not real. It's not the ultimate. Is it? Yeah. It is only because of a coming together of the necessary causes and conditions that it comes into existence. Therefore, its existence is imputed in that sense. It's an imputed existence. Yeah. So is it there different ways of looking at the same thing? Yeah. Right. So whether you call it a conventional truth or an imputed existence, you know, but you know, it's getting at the same meaning. It's a different way of looking at it, but it's getting at the same thing, isn't it? So, you know, yeah, conventional truth, imputed existence are synonymous, yeah, in this case, but you know, in this school, but you know, it's important, it's good if we understand why, you know, what is the meaning of conventional here in this context, and why is it an imputed existence, yeah. So, like, you know, the vase is an existence that comes about because of the gathering of many factors, yeah. Then it has to be something that is flat base, it's bulbous, you know, and what have you, you know. Then, you know, it becomes a vase, isn't it? Right? So, any other phenomena whose mode of existence is different from the definition of a conventional truth, then that thing is an ultimate truth, as Abhidhamma, as the Abhidhamma Kosha says, other exists as ultimate truths. So there are many examples given in the text, you know, to illustrate the conventional truth according to this school. Yeah. So one example is a mala. You know. We have a mala, isn't it? Assuming that it has 108 beats, you know. So it's only when all 108 beats come together, you know, and then if it's strung together, then you know you have a mind apprehending a mala, a rosary, isn't it? But if you start to take out each and every single beat, and at the end what you have left is just a string, and the mind apprehending the rosary will be cancelled, isn't it? Boleh? Tiwo? Huh? Our president agrees. So the rosary is an illustration of a conventional truth in this school, yeah. And then another example or another illustration is the forest, you know. You don't call a tree a forest, isn't it? But you have many trees located together in a specific geographical location, you know, then you call it a forest, yeah. isn't it? Yeah, you wouldn't call a tree a singular tree, a forest here. Likewise, an army is made up of many soldiers, isn't it? You don't call one soldier an army. Maybe Rambo, but otherwise, majority, I mean, you don't call one single soldier an army, isn't it? An army is composed of many soldiers, right? Do
you?
So when you eliminate, you know, whether you eliminate all the trees or you eliminate all the soldiers that make up an army, mentally, you know, you then at the end, what you have left is not a forest and not an army. So the mind apprehending army, mind apprehending forest doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, yo.
What did you say? That cinema, that tandem temba, say, Rota, go. Tandem, that Kuchataman, Tandem, the Karishin, the Gainas, Kuzo, the Karishla, the Telako, Chapa, Stadin Buti, then a tandem temba, say, then a Tinshi Shadokan, Dutin Chamis. That Dujin, and Tashoshi, the Korang Tile Chung of Diamond, to Tamushi, Chung Shoshi. That the Chamis Shadir, Rota, Chamis.
Okay, the point is that you have to understand what is the great exposition school's understanding of a conventional truth and an ultimate truth. Why is something an ultimate truth and why is some other thing a conventional truth? That's the point. Yeah? These illustrations are meant to help, you know. It's not so much about the vast of the army. Yeah. You get it, right? Then, an illustration of the ultimate truth is a directionally partless particle. Yes. So there's this particle that, let's say, there's this smallest possible particle in existence, yeah, whatever you call it, you know. So, according to this school, the smallest particle is directionally partless in that you cannot make it any smaller and it doesn't have any, it is directionally partless. So this thing is, this for them, is the smallest thing you can point to, you know, and you know, because it cannot go any smaller, therefore it's real, no? It's an ultimate truth. No? Because this directionally partless particle is the smallest possible thing in existence according to them. Because, and then it, you cannot do anything to it, you can't destroy it, you know, you will always be there. Therefore, for them, it's the ultimate. It's the ultimate truth. It's an ultimate truth. Because nobody can do anything to destroy this directionally partless particle, which means that you always exist. And if it exists, then necessarily there will be a valid cognizer apprehending it. Yeah. So the mind apprehending it can never be cancelled in any way, isn't it? So going by the definition of the ultimate truth, then this makes a directional partless particle an ultimate truth. It's in the mind apprehending it cannot be cancelled. As opposed to an imputed existent, an ultimate truth in this school is also same, you know, as saying substantially existent. Substantially existent, yeah. Well.
Shepherd to the chamber, 마치 천시샤에 다가난 시엔 두마치 숨수다 다 두마치 나가틴 조야 아니 그래 다 두마치 숨대 샤로
두마치
다 두마치 숨래 다 빼나 다 두마치 숨 빼나 두마치 나가다 오대 다 던달대 말했어 샤바 투기 샤바 투기 참여 같아요 던달대 말했어
Then other illustrations of the ultimate truth given in the root text are temporally partless moments of consciousness and uncompounded phenomena. So, for instance, uncompounded space. Yeah. So uncompounded space, for example, or temporally partless moments of consciousness. These are illustrations of ultimate truth. And basically, the reason why the ultimate truths are similar to what I've explained. Yeah.
What in the scene? What in the machine? Nagas in the Tagal, the machine Nagadi, that total you are to remember, the machine Nagai, not ten to you, that you are meeting with what Tapa Chagrisa, but it's in Samar to remember, what to the Paris, Katrina, what Deba Indavista, you ever see
that. So, uncompounded space. It's permanent. It doesn't. It will never undergo change. It's always there, whether you like it or not. It's there, and because it's there, it is always there. It's stable. It's always there. Then there will always be a mind apprehending uncompounded space. The mind can never be cancelled yet because it's always there. So it is the truth. You know, it is real. It is true. Okay. What about you know directionally partless particles, yeah? Are they impermanent or permanent? I always cannot remember the translation for this. So one finger snap, yeah. There's a technical term for the length of time, chazukijima. Yeah, chazukijima. This I huh? No, it's not the smallest one. It's just that the one finger snap. So. That is not the smallest moment of time, so it's just one finger snap. But that can be divided into 120 parts, yeah. Okay, so these 120, so can be divided into 120 parts. Yeah. So that one part, that or one over 120 of this finger snap, is the smallest moment unit of time, yeah. Okay. So that the 나는 말로
저기
So this is the smallest moment of unit of time, yeah. One over 120 of a finger snap, yeah. So that one, the smallest moment unit of time, is an ultimate truth, yeah. According to this school. Because it's the smallest, isn't it? Smallest moment of time possible. Okay, so the smallest unit of time is an ultimate truth, whereas, you know, the time, you know, it takes to, you know, do this, that is a conventional truth, according to the school. Boleh? You relate it back to the definition of the two truths, sir. So here, one way of dividing existence or objects of knowledge is into the two truths, yeah. Right? Conventional truth and ultimate truth. Having said that, if it is an existence, is it necessarily one of the two? So, okay, what is a person? So we have talked about conventional truth, we have talked about ultimate truth, we have talked about their synonyms, phenomena that are mutually inclusive with them, isn't it? Like conventional truths are imputed, phenomena of imputed existence, you know, ultimate truths are mutually inclusive with substantially existence, yeah. Having said that, what is a person? Is a person a substantially existent or imputed existent? Then, is the person the ultimate truth or conventional truth? Oh, the mind apprehending a person can see, yeah?
You got my question? Okay. Oh, why the answer?
Tire is here.
Who say conventional truth? Kichu.
Huh?
What? Somebody say something?
Ani ta chorwa asana, dushi asana, ani sampa.
Then the five omnipresent mental factors. The five aggregates. Aggregate of form, aggregate of feeling, aggregate of what else? Everyday results, okay. Compositional factors, consciousness, and discrimination, yeah. Okay. What are they? So, just as you said that a person is an imputed existence, and then you would also have to say that these five aggregates are imputed existence, yeah. Then consciousness is also imputed existence, no? Huh?
Oh.
Isn't the consciousness an ultimate truth? Huh? Oh, it follows that the smallest moment of consciousness is not an ultimate truth. Oh, then sorry. Yeah, so that's not a lot of people kick you, right? So consciousness is an ultimate truth or conventional truth according to this system? Huh? The mind apprehending consciousness can never be cancelled, isn't it? What do you think? It's the same thing, right? The mind apprehending a person can never be discarded, no? What do you think? Then that makes a person an ultimate truth, no? Hello, it's a logic and reasoning. It follows from your logic and reasoning, what? Huh? No matter what you do, the person can never cease to exist, right? Huh? The mind apprehending person can cease to exist? Can the person cease to exist or not? Huh? Then what goes from life to life? Who's the one saying yes now? So if the person will always exist, then it follows that the mind apprehending the person necessarily exists. Yeah? And it says here, according to the definition, the mind apprehending it is not cancelled, right? Which fulfills the definition of ultimate truth, right? You cannot destroy the person, isn't it? The person, self, person. We have seen the definitions and the illustrations of both convention and ultimate truth, right? Very clear, right? Okay, you based on that, you think about a person. Can a person cease to exist? Not? Can never destroy a person, right? I mean, the person is always there, right? There's always a person, right? Whether in hell or where, doesn't matter. So if it exists, then the mind apprehending that person will never exist, will never cease to exist, right? Which means the mind apprehending person can never be cancelled, yeah? So if that's the case, then that would make it an ultimate truth, and therefore it follows that then the person is a substantially existent. Then, likewise, similarly, you would also have to say that the aggregates and the forms, form what else? Form feeling and what I feel, those things, those five things are also ultimate truths, yeah? Are substantially existent, yeah? So, aggregate of form is an ultimate truth or conventional truth?
Be careful, this question will come. Huh?
Maybe more difficult to get 100 now. Have to say it's the ultimate truth, right? Huh? No, yes or no, not important, but why you say yes or no? You say no, right? I think I heard. Mr. Tan. Oh, wait, there are two Mr. Tans. I don't know who said no. Let's talk about aggregate of form. Aggregate of form is a huge, is a category that contains a hell of a lot of stuff in it. That sound is an example. The aggregate of form cannot be destroyed, right? Can the aggregate of form be destroyed, or cease to exist? No? Yeah, you blow on up, but there's another 999 million left, you know? The directionally partless particle. The directionally partless particle is not formed?
Huh?
All phenomena are included among in the five aggregates, right? So all compounded or composed phenomena are included in the five aggregates, right? So if that's the case, then the directionally partless particle would have to be one of the five aggregates, right? So where are you going to put it in? So it's clear, right? It has to go inside, go into the aggregate of form, to under.
Right.
So when we think about aggregate of form, it's not just restricted to what we always conceive of as the physical form that we have, isn't it? If you think like that, then it makes the aggregate of form an ultimate truth, no? Mighty Hang.
What?
Huh? You can't see me? So
it
seems like you have to say that the person is an substantially existent. Same likewise with the five aggregates, yeah. Seems like you have to say that they are substantially existent, right? The mind apprehending a person can never be cancelled, right? So, if you think about it, then you have to say that then the person is an ultimate truth, right? Five aggregates are ultimate truth.
Accepting or not accepting?
This is something to think, really. You have to think. It's not just say yes, no, no. Why, you know? But you know, if we go by the definition, right? If you've seen the definition, right? This is the Bible, it cannot be changed. Yeah? The essential difference between a conventional truth and an ultimate truth lies in whether the mind apprehending the phenomenon in question can be cancelled or not, right? According to this school.
Accepting that must be clear, that one.
Is that? The mind apprehending a directionally partless particle can never be. can never be abandoned, can never be cancelled, right? So we say that the mind apprehending a directionally partless particle can never be cancelled, right? Why? It all boils down to the fact that the directionally partless particle is the smallest matter form, and it isn't like that. That's the reality, and you cannot do anything about it. Can you totally destroy the smallest atom particle in existence? It's always there, right? So since it cannot be destroyed, the mind apprehending it cannot be cancelled, right? And that makes the directionally partless particle an ultimate truth, isn't it? Going by the definition here. So this is clear, right? No dispute, right? So based on this understanding, then somebody comes along and asks you, like Karimushi, what he did just now, right? Is a person imputedly existent or substantially existent? What do you have to say? The person is imputed in dependence upon the five aggregates. Sounds familiar, right? Sounds familiar, right? Something from the previous life or previous module. Yeah. Those get 100 marks, I think it was us. So the person ultimately is that which is imputed independence among the five aggregates, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about the person, will he cease to exist? No? Will the person cease to exist? Not possible, right? The person is not the body, right? I mean, we say what's the person? Person is imputed independence upon the five any of the five aggregates, right? Imputed independence on any of the five aggregates, right? So, the person is not the body, right? I mean. What's the correct answer? Do you is Geshe making? The person moves from life to life, go up, go down. What else? Achieve liberation, moves to enlightenment, right? There will never ever be a time when the person ceases to exist. So after having said this, yeah? After having said all this, then do we then have to say that the person is substantially existent? Do we have to say? No. Same thing with the main mind, consciousness or that feeling or mental factors, discrimination, yeah. So yeah, I think because the very strong imprint of the consequence middle way school, I think. The higher school view very strong. That's why. but now the question is, why do you say that the person is imputedly existent? Why? Why?
Definition.
Yeah, if we go by definition, it has to be a substantially existent, right? Going by this definition. Yeah, but more people kiss you just now. More people kiss you. We are saying that it's imputedly existent. So why do you cling on to the idea that the person is imputedly existent? You can only cling on to something that is substantially existent, right? Yeah, it can be found, because according to this school, a person which is an existent is necessarily substantially established. Hap Ching is naturally predisposed to the consequence middle way school, the highest school. So think about it, since you have to say that the person is substantially existent, likewise consciousness, like, then the other mental factors like feeling, discrimination, you know, mental attention, you know, and contact. Basically, yeah, consciousness is you have to say also substantially existent, yeah. What about water? Water. Water is an ultimate truth or a conventional truth according to this system? 水. Actually, you should be able to give the answer right way. You should be able to say, yes, water is conventionally existent, because I already gave you the answer in the previous lesson, right? Vase and vase water, right? Yeah, so vase, an illustration of conventional truth was given, right? Vase and vase water, right? Water is a conventional truth, no? But person is the ultimate truth, no? Then the aggregates are ultimate truth. No? Then how? How? So, you have to think about it, yeah. So here in this school, there's also a division of into matter, consciousness, and non-associated compositional factors. Yeah, remember that those three divisions from the previous module. So all forms will go under the category of matter. Then consciousness would include main minds and mental factors.
Yeah.
So all the forms will go under matter, yeah, the category of matter. But the forms when divided, they are external forms, internal forms, yeah. Which basically same like before, right? But the one additional thing here is the category of what we call the non-revelatory form. Non-revelatory form. Okay, so external forms are basically the form, sound, smell, taste, and touch. Yeah. Then the internal forms are basically the eye sense power, ear sense power, and so forth. Yeah. Those that are included in the continuum of a person. So the proponents of great exposition assert that there's a non-revelatory form. So, for example, at the motivation phase of a physical or verbal action, either virtuous or non-virtuous, right? At the motivation phase, before the action is carried out, you know, is expressed physically or verbally, at the motivation phase, there's a thought, yeah, there's an intention that thinks, oh, I'm going to do this, whether it's a good virtuous action or non-virtuous action, yeah. So according to this school, that is a form which is not perceptible to the naked eye, yeah, but nevertheless, is a form, and it is classified, it is termed as a non-revelatory form, non-revealing, basically, non-revelatory form.
Yeah.
So according to the Great Exposition School, you know, their worldview of things, you know, and events and phenomena, everything that exists is necessarily substantially established, right? Which means that from the side of the object, there's something there. That's why we say substance. No, every object has a substance. But substance here, we have to think of it not necessarily just always, you know, to do with atoms. No, but there's a substance. There's substantiality, basically. There's something real. You know, basically. And so all phenomena for them, everything that exists, you know, is necessarily substantially established, and for them, which means it's the same as saying all things are truly established. Okay, so according to this school, everything that exists is substantially established. Is truly established. Having said that, while everything that exists is truly established, it doesn't mean that everything is true.
That's
Yeah, so while all things are necessarily substantially existent, substantially established, truly established, it doesn't mean that everything is truly is true. Because in order for something to be true, the mind apprehending it can never be cancelled, which makes only ultimate truths true. Conventional truths are false. So according to this system, all phenomena are substantially established, isn't it? Are truly established, right? Because this school has the worldview that in order for anything to exist, it is not sufficient merely to have a consciousness imputing that object. There must also be something right there in that object. There must be a substance, something right there in the object, a substance, something substantial about the object in question. Yeah. Yeah. If there's nothing in that object, there's no substantiality in the, then, you know, just having a mind imputing something cannot cause that object to exist. And so in this school, their worldview is that they don't know how to posit that things and events exist as merely imputed, yeah, by consciousness. Yeah. There has to be something from the side of the object, substance, real. Right, that's what we think, right? So because things are like that, according to this worldview, there's something from the side of the object, there's a substance there, there's substantiality. Therefore, their worldview is that anything that exists is necessarily truly established. Everything that exists is necessarily substantially established.
Yes.
So, for our purpose here, you know, the point is, as long as you can understand what are the two truths, you know. You know, let's say, you know, based on some illustration, you know, if you're able to figure out, you know, at least some idea why water is a conventional truth and uncompounded space is an ultimate truth in this system, you understand why, you know, according to this worldview, yeah, then I think that's the point, and if you get it, then just. So, which means that according to this school, we have to say that uncompounded space is true. Yeah? And water is false. Okay, yeah. I mean, you cannot think of that. I mean, the word false, the word is used, is false. Why is it? Yeah, so these are, you know, illustrations are meant to help us understand what is conventional truth, what conventional truth means in this system, and what ultimate truth means in this school. Yeah.
Okay. 다 도시네 다 도랑 가다 나시래 다 남아 산지부 두다메 강사스도 다 왔다 차저시 캐는 버스시 제가 아 비자트님이 다 와서 저든지 동안 저든지 동시 담냥한데 가 쉬워라세시 다 뒤나네 동시 담해봐세 통다디 다 틀라 남지 저든 동시 담해봐세 자래디 좋아니 박지로 온지 또는 담해봤어 들어 자꾸 그랬습니다 다 진대시 제법
If you remember our earlier discussion on what defines a proponent of Buddhist tenet, a proponent of Buddhist tenet is a Buddhist who accepts the four seals, and the four seals are the four things that attest that a particular doctrine is Buddhist. Yeah. Right? So you remember what the four seals? Sometimes I got mental block in English. You know? Sometimes mental block in Tibetan. No, what am I supposed to say? All composed phenomena are impermanent. All contaminated things are miserable. All phenomena are empty and selfless. And nirvana is peace. Wow, peace. Okay. Very good. Okay, since you're able to rattle that off. Okay, then the third seal, all phenomena are empty and selfless, yeah. So I think all proponents of Buddhist tenet would agree that empty and selfless there refers to the absence or the lack of a permanent, I mean, there are different ways of explaining, right? But you know, the explanation that is accepted by all is that So all proponents of Buddhist tenet assert that there isn't a self that is permanent, unitary, and independent, isn't it, right? So the third seal here, all phenomena are empty and selfless. In interpreting this particular seal, most scholars would accept that, or would say that that statement is talking about the emptiness or the lack of a permanent, unitary, and independent self. So while there are many scholars who would assert that, you know, the third seal, that all phenomena empty and selfless, is referring to the lack of a permanent, unitary, and independent self, there are some who assert that that has to be understood, you know, that third seal has to be understood in terms of the lack of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. So the reason why there is this differing interpretation of the third seal has got to do with the subdivisions of the Great Exposition School. So under the Great Exposition School, there are four basic schools or four main schools, which when further divided all together, you have 18, there are 18 subdivisions of the Great Exposition School. One of the subdivisions are known as the Vasiputriyas, or followers of Vasiputra. Yeah. It's said in some texts that this particular subdivision of the Great Exposition School, the followers of Vasiputra, assert a self a person. Okay, so the Great Exposition School, there are 18 sub-schools, 18 subdivisions, okay? 17 out of 18 assert a selflessness of person. Then there's this one subdivision called the Vasiputriyans, or the followers of Vasiputra. They, in the text, it is stated that they assert a self of person. So, if in the, some of the sutras, the Buddha actually said, he actually stated that there is a self a person in some sutras.
Yeah.
So, because Buddha actually said in some said, you know, in some occasions that, and the Buddha actually did say that there is a self a person. Therefore, there are some followers who therefore felt the need to assert a self a person, because Buddha said, yeah. And these particular followers, they assert that there is a self-sufficient, substantially existent person.
Yeah.
So the followers of Vasiputra, or the Vasiputriyans, yeah, they, which is the, one of the sub-schools of the subdivisions of the Great Exposition School, they assert a self a person in that the self is, or the person is self-sufficient, substantially existent. So they assert that self a person. But nevertheless, these Vasiputriyans do not assert that there is a self that is permanent, unitary and independent. Yeah. So, following from the assertions of these Vasiputriyans, some scholars have therefore said, you know, that these Vasiputriyans are not Buddhists from the perspective of the view. Okay, so there are some scholars who then who therefore assert that these Vasiputriyans are not Buddhist because their view is not Buddhist, because they assert a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. But there are other scholars who assert that they are Buddhists. Maybe they are more embracing. They are Buddhists. They are Buddhists also from the point of view, of, even from the point of the view, the worldview, they are Buddhists. Why? Because they don't assert a self that is permanent, unitary, and independent. So, and you know, in the four seals, the third seal, you know, if you understand the third seal, all phenomena empty and selfless to mean that, you know, there isn't a permanent, unitary, and independent self, then, you know, they fit nicely. They are Buddhists, 自己人. One of us. So therefore, we say that a proponent of Buddhist tenets is someone who asserts the four seals, right? And the third seal of phenomena is empty and selfless, have to be understood as saying that the permanent, unitary, and independent self does not exist. But as to what is a self of a person versus a selflessness of a person, in this context, what exactly do we mean by a self that is permanent, unitary, and independent? And what exactly is the selflessness of a person? And also, what is the meaning of the absence of or the emptiness of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, and so forth? This will be discussed in the in the next lesson.
Okay, your question, then I'll say.
Are the non-revelatory form and phenomenon source form asserted to be synonymous by all the four tenets? Are the non-revelatory form and phenomenon source form
So the question was, do all the four tenets assert that the non-revelatory form is mutually inclusive with the phenomenon form source?
Source form.
Phenomenal source form. Yeah, I always get that one mixed up. So, it is clear in the text that the Vaibhashikas, the Great Exposition School, and the Consequence Middle Way School, they both assert non-revelatory forms. But the non-revelatory form doesn't seem to, as a terminology, doesn't seem to appear in the assertions of the Sutra School, Mind Only School, and Autonomy Middle Way School.
So when if one takes the person as substantially established, going by our discussion earlier, can one say that that is to do with generality of a person? Because a person of the current life and a person of the future life, you know, they both exist as a generality. Whereas the instance or a particulars of a person of the current life does not exist as a person of the future life. So therefore the instances of a person exists as a conventional truth in that sense. And then also you can correlate that to the aggregates as well.
So earlier the question I posed about the person was about the person in general. Person in general, yeah. And then, of course, the person in general would seem to be substantially established, isn't it? Substantially existent. Existent. Zero. So when we talk about person, we're asking you about a person, it's about a person in general, yeah. But of course if we speak about a specific, you know, person, let's say the person of this life. So whether we will have to say that it is substantially existent or not is something to analyze, yeah. Likewise with feeling. Feeling in general, yeah, you know, substantially existent, yeah. But we can talk about feelings over a specific period of time, you know. So the feelings over a specific period of time, let's say, you know, you're feeling happy for 1 hour or for 1 day. I mean, you're feeling happy for a day. But if it is only limited to the 1 hour, and therefore it ceases to exist. If it ceases to exist, then therefore that specific, the feeling of a specific unit of time cannot be a substantial existent, yeah. Yeah. So the feeling, the feeling of today can cease to exist. It ceases to exist. Yeah. If it ceases to exist, the mind apparently will cease to exist also, right? Can be cancelled, right? So then, therefore, that makes that feeling of the day, of 1 day. A conventional truth, no? Then if you want to analyze, you know, what about pleasant feelings? Unpleasant feelings? Feelings of equanimity? Or none of your non, we say neutral, okay? Neutral feelings, yeah.
Especially
bliss. Shock. The shock feeling is conventional truth or ultimate truth in this system?
Must be ultimate truth.
So anyway, as long for our purpose, as long as you get the idea why certain things are conventional truths in these systems and while others are ultimate truths, which means in order to get idea, you have to understand what exactly is a conventional and ultimate truth according to this system. As long as you get this idea, it's good. Is all we need. Why do you need this understanding? Because when you progress, you know, to the next standard, the higher view, then you be able to. You will have a different explanation, yeah. Isn't it? It's a progression, right?
Rinpoche, I have three questions and
just one.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, not past, not future,
okay, sorry,
present.
Okay. I smash a pot.
Oh yeah.
My eye conscious. This is my question, yeah?
Yeah.
So for example, I smash a pot.
Whose pot?
Your pot already?
My ex-boyfriend's pot. Okay. Okay. My eye consciousness apprehending the pot is cancelled, yeah? But at the same moment, what and where is the belly awareness, the belly cognizer that validates the substantial, the substance pot? And what does it apprehend and how does it validate the existence of the substance pot?
So basically you're saying once you smash the pot, the mind that certifies the pot as a substantial, as a substantially established also disappears, basically you're saying?
No. The conventional pot disappears, right?
Yeah.
Then the the eye consciousness appearing the pot is cancelled. But the last lesson, there was this teaching on the three times, the instances of the three times. Yeah, that one I don't understand. Yeah? So, well, when the pot is smashed, the past, present, future pot, which is not, how to say, does not go out of existence, right? And then there's the substance of the pot that is still existing. So I'm asking, if the substance, which pot is still existing, then what is the belly awareness that cognizes the pot, and what does it apprehend?
Okay, in the first place, the past, present, and future pot exist at different times or exist simultaneously? What do you think?
There's a substance pot that is not...
No. The past pot, present pot, future pot exists separately or exists simultaneously at one time?
Differently.
Yeah. When you destroy a pot, you know, the pot is destroyed, but the substance is there, isn't it? No? If you have gold pot, you give me. You can destroy it, but I'll keep the...
Okay, maybe I think, for many years, right, I'm struggling with these two terms. Maybe what I should be asking is, maybe next time, not now, but what is the difference between the two terms, entity and substance? I think I don't understand. That's why I can't understand the concept.
One question is substance and what?
Entity and substance. Our last basic program, I think, is translated as substantial entity. I don't know.
In this system, no problem. Same. Substantial, substance, entity, substantial entity, same. In this system, this. So.
Okay.
So,